In late 1976, when I asked Adlai Mukhtadi to help arrange a special series of television interviews with President Sadat, he went to Egypt and began setting up the meeting. He told me it would be necessary for me to meet a number of other officials there of the cabinet and the government before I would be able to interview Mr. Sadat personally. It required two trips for me to finally interview the president and the first lady of Egypt, which I finally accomplished. On the first visit, Mr. Mukhtadi had set up interviews with several major officials, including their Speaker of the House, who was later assassinated by terrorists in Cyprus. I also interviewed the publisher of Al-Aham, the official Cairo daily newspaper, and several other cabinet-level members of the government. I told all of them that I was completely apolitical, that I intended presenting both sides of all issues fairly, and these and many other meetings were necessary to reassure the Egyptian government on that point. I was invited to a private dinner in the home of former Secretary General of the United Nations, Boutros-Ghali, who then resided in Cairo. On my second visit, I was able to interview both First Lady Jihan Sadat in Cairo and President Anwar Sadat in the presidential palace in separate interviews. Our TV crews shot hundreds of feet of footage all over Egypt at the Suez Canal, the pyramids, and in Cairo, and we put together a one-hour special television program which was shown all over the United States, entitled Egypt Under Sadat, and another half-hour television program that was also featured and contained excerpts of the interviews. Pictures of the interviews and the president's letter of thanks to me are in my possession. That letter is framed and occupies a place on my office wall. Now, of course, all of my questions were directed toward the Sadats regarding the Middle East, Egypt, Israel, and the other Arab nations, the past wars in the area, and, of course, with the future, and with my assurance that I would present their point of view fairly, and I did. Following our formal on-camera interview, I had an opportunity for a freewheeling discussion with President Sadat, who told me very feelingly of his past and his family, and especially about his younger brother, who had been an officer in the Egyptian army during the Yom Kippur War and who had been killed in the fighting. Mr. Sadat said he was like a son to him and explained the large age difference and how he had helped raise his younger brother. He was obviously moved by the loss of his brother. He spoke of how he had died a hero fighting for Egypt. Mr. Sadat had a very visible callus in the precise center of his forehead from his five times daily prayers as a Muslim. All the big billboard pictures of him in Cairo and in the press always showed that callus very clearly. He smoked a pipe during the interview and the discussion that followed. His voice was a very deep bass, a low rumble. He was personable, likable, intelligent, a man of the people. Anwar Sadat had come from a small village along the Nile and risen to become an officer in the Egyptian army. He became vice president of Egypt during the presidency of Gamal Abdel Nasser and succeeded him upon Nasser's death in 1970. He was very proud of having ordered the Russians out of Egypt. He told me of a secret trip he had taken to Moscow and of how the Egyptian armed forces had become too dependent upon the Soviets for equipment and spare parts. The Soviets were attempting to exert too much influence and had a large number of diplomats and military advisors inside Egypt. Because he was angered over their attitude and angered over the fact that spare parts weren't forthcoming, Sadat ordered the Soviets to pack up and leave. He was the only modern leader to ever do so. Very large numbers of Soviets and their dependents were forced to leave Egypt in only a matter of days. His wife, Jihan, had spoken to me of her first trip to New York. She had gone there with her daughter and was tremendously impressed with the power and strength of America. She told me of her personal impressions of the United States and how she had said to her husband upon her return, "Anwar, why are we fighting with these people?" Of course, she referred not to actual fighting, but the political debates that had taken place over the years as the United States continued to be a mentor and supporter of Israel. I had not really planned to say anything specific to President Sadat other than the questions I had submitted for the interview, but somehow the moment seemed right. Israel had turned over the Sinai to Egypt 2 years previously, not only handing back Egypt's domestic oil supplies, but enabling them to become an oil exporter. That had been a tremendous conciliatory gesture on the part of Israel. Our on-camera interview had covered the entire geopolitical spectrum of the Middle East, of which I was keenly aware. So I said this, "Mr. President, why don't you just go to Israel? Why not get on your airplane and just fly there and tell them you're on your way? You would go down in history as a great leader who helped bring peace to the Middle East. I told him, reminding him how Egypt has the largest Arab nation in population and labor force. I said, the Israelis are like a brain trust. Here is a very high per capita proportion of doctors and scientists and educators and engineers. Why not combine the large Egyptian labor force with the skills and expertise of the Israelis for the mutual benefit and prosperity of all? I went on for some time about the tragedy of war and about the great benefits to be had by peaceful cooperation. And of course, I didn't have any need to remind him of the poverty and squalor that was everywhere visible in Cairo. Well, he began to tell me that he couldn't go to Israel. He didn't name any specific organizations, but he talked about the danger of doing such a thing because it would stir up outrage among his own supporters and his own people. He talked about his political enemies and how they might use such a move on his part to their advantage. He also indicated that he felt he might be rebuffed by the Israelis, and I specifically remember saying, but if you just went there, if you told them you were coming for personal talks, what would they do? They wouldn't dare shoot down the personal airplane of the president of Egypt. I mused aloud about how the entire Middle East could become a major power on the world scene, and how if real cooperation could occur among the Arab states and that Israel would cooperate, that all of them would benefit, that even a kind of a loose-knit United States of the Middle East could eventually be created, which would be of great benefit for all. Well, at length, our meeting came to an end, and I've carried vivid memories of it in my mind ever since. I cannot help but wonder, in retrospect, if I planted some seeds of thought in his mind which led to his later actions, because, you see, within only months of our talk, and that was early in 1977, in November of that year, President Anwar Sadat, in a surprise visit, went to Jerusalem to meet Prime Minister Begin of Israel. The Camp David meetings followed. Then came the signing of the Camp David Accords at the White House with President Carter, and a formal peace treaty was signed between Egypt and Israel on March 26, 1979. When the Sadats came to Washington, my wife and I received a formal engraved invitation to a reception and a banquet in honor of the Sadats. We responded to it. We flew to Washington, D.C. from Pasadena and joined with several dozen others who were also attending. When my wife and I walked up the wide staircase with the many other guests, it was to find the Sadats in formal attire in a receiving line, and Mrs. Jihan Sadat greeted me warmly, met my wife and greeted her warmly, turned to her husband as he finished speaking to the one just ahead of us and said, "Anwar, it is Mr. and Mrs. Garner Ted Armstrong." President Sadat said, "Of course," and shook our hands very warmly. I was able to mention to him that I had talked to Dr. Henry Kissinger, whom I met at a reception in Dallas, and how I had conveyed to Mr. Kissinger how Mr. Sadat had told me, "I trust Henry." He had spoken of his many meetings with Henry Kissinger during Kissinger's term as Secretary of State. And we had only a few moments to speak and then moved on into the banquet hall. And there I met and shook hands with Senator Nelson Rockefeller, former Secretary of State Cyrus Vance, Senator Hubert Humphrey, all of whom told me they listened to my television program. And incidentally, I was able to meet ABC's Barbara Walters, if that's interesting to anyone in passing. At that time, our television program was on a very good station at a very good time in Washington, D.C., and I had no doubt whatsoever that it was viewed in the White House on many occasions. It was only 2 years later that I was deeply shocked and very painfully grieved when I saw that brutal assassination of Anwar Sadat on television in 1981. He was dressed in a military general's uniform, reviewing the Egyptian army, which had cracked down on militant Islamic fundamentalists only a month earlier in September. It was a bright, brilliant, sunny October day in Cairo, and a very proud one for Mr. Anwar Sadat, when suddenly some of the soldiers passing in parade rushed up to the reviewing stand and began spraying the crowd with submachine gun fire. President Sadat stood up, faced them, held out the palms of both hands, and shouted "No!" just as several bullets struck him. His murder resulted in the arrest of some of the conspirators, and they eventually were themselves executed. Vice President Hosni Mubarak succeeded Anwar Sadat, and of course Hosni Mubarak is the president of Egypt to this day.